It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But DeKrell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown T minus 5, 4, 3. Two, one.
All right, everyone, so just so you know, this was the second half of our very special edition, which we recorded for 2 hours. This is the discussion part of it, which deals with religion and science fiction and why we think that fantasy is doing better than sci-fi, basically why it's more popular. So hope you enjoy the episode. We'll have more regular programming, particularly an interview with Peter Arulian, author of The Unremembered. That'll start next week, and then we'll have our torture cinema, all that fun stuff. So thanks for listening. We hope you really enjoy this episode. Please don't hesitate to leave a comment on the blog or whatever. So, all right, so I'll shut up now and get right to the episode. Well, we have two topics for our main discussion, which I wanted to have John on largely because, we hung out at MegaCon, which was awesome. At least hanging out, MegaCon was special.
Yeah,
it was a very interesting...
Continue the story.
I did have somebody tell me that being paid pro rates, that getting paid by royalty was the same as getting paid pro rates, which is not, in any magical writing book that I know of, is not true. But, you know, whatever, he can live in his magic world. But anyway, so I wanted John on here because I know he is much more religious than I am, and we were going to talk about religion and science fiction and fantasy, and, well, Adam is on the show, and he happens to also be more religious than I am, and sort of give more of a counterbalance to have people who have more of a religious experience than Jen and I, and also because John is awesome, and, well, Adam's just whatever. And, of course, we have Jason Sanford because, you know, he's Jason Sanford.
And we love him.
Okay, yes. Well, hey, you know, okay, yeah, I'll sit here and let my ego be stroked.
Just to start off the discussion of religion and sci-fi, and of course, even in fantasy, since that we could probably talk about that too, is there too much religion in sci-fi, or if not, is sci-fi hostile to religion? Who wants to go first and dive in? I'm not going to put my foot in my mouth again, so.
But you're so good at that.
I know. Yes.
Okay. Well, based on the article that you gave us about is there too much religion in science fiction that's focused specifically on television, she raised some interesting points. I think it was a she, in that yes, Lost turned into a religious show, which nobody was expecting. Battlestar Galactica did the same.
It was always a religious show.
It always had religious elements.
Oh, sure. Like, it became a show there, the religion was central to the plot. You're right.
Right, exactly. Same thing with Lost, which had religious discussions, but was not a religious show. It was very specifically a science fiction show. Everybody knew it was science fiction and watched every episode knowing that. So when you come into the end and are like, oh, by the way, this is all a religious experience, that's kind of weird. And the same thing actually was happening with Stargate Universe, which was very much a science fiction show, but there were some hints that the direction that they were taking it was towards some sort of, you know, God, some sort of unifying theory, which was more religious in undertones than science fictional. Does that mean that there's too much religion in science fiction? Probably not. There's a lot of religion in television science fiction,
sure,
oddly enough, but I don't see a lot of it in written form.
Yeah,
maybe I'm reading the wrong books, though.
No, I agree with you. I mean, when I think back to the science fiction books I have read, not a lot of them. If religion was in the books, it was maybe a mention, or as in the case with Edward Willett's books, Marsuguro and the other Terra Insiguro, I think is the title. Religion is actually fairly negative in that, because Earth is taken over by this extreme radical, I mean, technically Christian radicalist church, which wants racial purity, essentially, no genetic modification. So it seems like if it's mentioned, it's just mentioned, or it's treated negatively. But that's based on what I've read, and I believe John, since he reads like 12 novels a day, is probably more read than I am, and I'm sure Jason has been reading fairly longer than I have, or moderately longer than I have. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, do you all get the sense that it is, that it's not present in the literature?
Well, it's there. I definitely think it's there. I mean, it depends on what books you read. Stranger in a Strange Land is all about the creation of what is essentially a new religion. It is the Martian language religion that, you know, is brought to Earth. And, you know, but, it, you know, Heinlein goes pretty rough on traditional religions. But, I mean, the whole thrust of his book is that he's trying to create a new religion. You have Gene Wolfe's Book of the New Sun series.
Right.
Religious motifs and underlying that entire four-book series.
Yeah, and Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler has a very strong religious element.
Exactly. So I think that it is there. Now, I think part of what you're seeing and what you're talking about is there is definitely a lot of science fiction writers are very antagonistic towards religion, and it shows up in their in what they write. And, you know, I think that just reflects the, you know, the people who read the genre and the people who write the genre. You know, there's, you know, there's a real, you know, there's a strong, it's just like, you know, there's libertarians in the science fiction community, where there's, you know, there's a lot of people in the science fiction community really hate religion, you know.
Oh, sure.
So, I mean, it's just the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Jason. It just, it comes from the presuppositions of the writer.
Sure.
What is it that they're trying to do? What is their end goal as an author in this particular novel? I mean, you think of Dune, let's say, like the Bene Gesserit, it's a very structured sort of religious kind of thing. But at the same time, the anti-hero or the hero, depending on how you look at it, ends up also creating his own religion in that novel. So, you know, but yet it's completely a science fiction novel. So is there this real antagonism? Sometimes, yeah. I think it just depends. Sometimes science fiction can do it really well. I think Dune does it really well. I don't always agree with all his conclusions about religion, but, and it's not necessarily a religious novel. I mean, that's not the entire intent. It's more philosophic in intent.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, I've read, you know, talk about my 12 books a day, Sean, you laugh about that. But, I mean, I've read books that deal with religion in many religious forms, and there's lots of different types of religion. You know, you can think of religion in the sense of the very structured Catholic Church, high church kind of thing.
Sure.
Or you have more the Anabaptist kind of thing that kind of grew in American history, where it was very destructured, and still we would consider it today even very formally structured, but at the time it was very... when it was first birthed, anyway, it was very revolutionary.
Sure.
And then you've got stuff that is completely decentralized. You know, people who they don't subscribe to any formal thing. They're really truly agnostic in that sense. There's just so many different ways that religion is expressed that in literature it's going to be expressed in many, many ways. And so you're going to see it if you're looking for it.
Sure. So would we say then that SF is maybe not antagonistic towards religion? There are certain people who maybe have that, and that reflects in their writing. But that overall, is it maybe just, it's a very varied structure, or does it sort of lean in any particular direction? Because I know there have been discussions where science fiction has been said to sometimes just pretend that religion doesn't exist, and that is the dominant theme. And I mean, does anyone think that that is true of science fiction, or?
I'd say no.
I
yeah, I mean, you could go with the fact that, you know, there's kind of, I wouldn't say a longstanding belief, not necessarily, but between science fiction, science, you know, being somehow anti-religion. There is going to be that conversation until the end of time. But when it comes to science fiction, the literature doesn't necessarily reflect that argument. The argument is there necessarily, but it doesn't show that science excludes religion or faith or any of those things. And this is coming from an atheist perspective. Right. Is that I see religion there. I don't, I'm not offended by it when it is there.
Sure.
I think it's that I think science fiction can have the theological discussions without being antagonistic. And those discussions can be occasionally incredibly poignant discussions.
Absolutely.
With things like the, what is the series that the guy talked about when we were down at the convention?
Mary Doria Russell, The Sparrow.
Oh, Sparrow.
Yeah.
The Sparrow, exactly. And when you have books like that that are very much steeped in theology and the traditions of various religions, you know, they might not be everybody's cup of tea, but as John was saying with Dune, you know, on one hand you have this very rigid religious structure. On the other hand, you have a messiah who is fighting back against that structure, but he is very much a messiah. I mean, that is his figure. Even before the religion is created, that's the role that he takes. So I wouldn't say that it's necessarily hostile, but on an individual basis, yes, you might occasionally see some hostility. I don't see it very often, though, personally.
Well, go ahead, Adam. Sorry.
Oh, I wasn't speaking.
I was going to say there's definitely there's a strong segment of the science fiction community which is very hostile to religion. And you saw it with the most recent Nebula Awards. The story which won in the novelette category, That Leviathan Whom Thou Hath Made, by Eric James Stone, is a story told from a Mormon point of view. So it's one thing to write a science fiction about religions that don't exist. I mean, that people can kind of tolerate, some people tolerate that better. But when you write about current religions, you stir it all up. And there were some very negative reactions from people to Eric's story, you know. So, and, you know, a lot of it wasn't said publicly. You know, you heard it, you know, in personal conversations or overheard it at conventions, stuff like that. But, you know, there's some people who were very negative on the story because it was, you know, it was a positive story about religion, positive science fiction story about religion. And it's almost like, you know, some people feel that it's okay to write about religion if you make it negative or if you make it an imaginary religion that's or something like that. But can't be positive. So, I mean, it does exist, but it's not everyone. And it's not, you know, it doesn't contaminate, so to speak, the whole genre.
Yeah. And he's going to be getting a lot more flack as a writer because recently some comments he made about the genetic basis for homosexuality have come to light and some people not happy about the comments.
I haven't heard about that. I'll have to.
I found out through Outer Alliance, which is it's basically just for people who are fans of LGBT science fiction and fantasy. And the comments were several years ago, so I don't know if he still believes this, what he said, but they were something along the lines of that basically they're genetically not appropriate. I'll send a link to folks.
Send me the link. I'd like to read that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we can go into another conversation. I mean, Orson Scott Card and got into all that too. But send me that link. I'd like to read that.
Yeah.
But, you know, just staying on the religious point of view, I mean, it's just like you have with scientists, there are religious scientists and there are atheistic scientists and everybody in between. And, you know, sometimes there's this stereotype that scientists are all atheists, and that's not true. The vast majority of them are religious. So, you know, they see no conflict between what they do in science and their religious beliefs. And I think most science fiction writers and fans are the same way.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, I know Jen and I are both atheists, and I like a good variety. I mean, I do like the books by Edward Willett, in which there is a fairly negative view of religion, but largely because of what the kind of critique he's doing of this sort of dogmatic viewpoint. And in fact, both parties are dogmatic, and neither of them are non-religious. They're just not right. The same, but they're both dogmatic in their own way. And it takes somebody in between to kind of tell them right. not to go that direction. But
and there's nothing wrong with having writing a negative view of religion either, because I mean it's part of the human condition, and you need to approach it from all sides. I mean, religion's done some awful things in our world, but it's also done some great things. So
absolutely,
as long as you know you're trying to capture the real essence of it, you know, you don't try to just present a positive or negative spin. That's my thing.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, don't be dogmatic about your negativity.
Yeah, exactly. Don't be dogmatic right. about your dogma.
Very true. I mean,
I think the tendency is more to be critical of religion than it is to be critical of faith. And I think that's where the distinction needs to be drawn specifically. And not even all religion, but the more extremist of the religion. And like Jason said, when it's a more moderate portrayal, usually people don't have an issue with it, and you know, that's not where it becomes critical. When you have, I mean, it's like Dune with the very dogmatic Bene Gesserit, that's where he becomes the most critical. Although eventually you start becoming very critical of the people who exist with blind faith. So, true. You know, it can go both ways. Like I said, I appreciate it because it's interesting, and it explores. This is what science fiction is supposed to do: explore the human condition. So, and religion will always be a part of that.
Yeah, no.
okay. That's Western religion. I mean, the question then becomes: how do we portray Eastern religions,
or at least things that seem to be an amalgam of an Eastern religion, or something that takes a page from that? In the event exactly. that it's a fake religion, it's not real.
Well, right? It depends on what you mean by an Eastern religion. Are you talking about the ancestor worship of the Chinese? Are you talking about the fairy tales that Western fairy tales and Chinese fairy tales are given treatment within science fiction and fantasy all the time. Maybe Western fairy tales more so than let's say, Eastern. But so those are more like what we call fairy tales. But, you know, for instance, the Islam, that's also a very dogmatic religion, and it's formulated that way, and so that would kind of even fall into the whole Western schema of, you know, this religion is too dogmatic, if you know what I'm saying.
Do you mean like certain groups within the Islamic faith are that very dogmatic?
No, I'd say generally that Islam and, let's say, Christianity have a lot in common in that they believe in absolute truths and things like that.
Oh, whereas, okay, I get what you mean now.
Yeah, that's what I mean by that, is that you can call Islam an Eastern religion, but really it shares much more in common with Christianity versus, say, Buddhism or Hinduism or something like that.
So, right, because it's descended from the Abrahamic beginning point.
Traditions.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. I would, when I say Eastern, I usually, I'm specifically referring to things that are non-Western. And even though the Muslim religion shares its birth with Western religions, it is more commonly referred to as Eastern because it's of the Occident and whatnot. So
okay. I do have to jump in here quick on this, because I've seen this in science fiction. And especially Western science fiction, this belief that, you know, the Eastern religions are a purer form of religion. Arthur C. Clarke was a famed author who was just enamored with Buddhism, specifically Theravada Buddhism. And he seemed to, you know, in a number of his novels, there's references like that. It was the only religion in which it never spilled blood, you know, the only really good religion that had ever existed. And when I spent 2 years in Thailand as a Peace Corps volunteer, and it, Theravada Buddhism is the Buddhism practice there. It's a great thing, but it's the same. It has the same religious baggage that every other religion in the world does. And I think a lot of people in the West, we look and say, oh, the Eastern religions are a pure religion or something like that. And it's not true. I mean, in Thailand, you had monks who were televangelist monks. You had monks in sex scandals. You had monks, when I was a monk near, living near where I was stationed, killed some woman and assaulted her. I mean, you know, you have the same, you know, filth that builds up in every religion. So, you know, sometimes I do wonder, though, you know, about when I hear people talking about Eastern religions, almost like, well, they're purer there. No, you know, if you go there, there was a temple on every block, just like there's a church on every block in the United States. There were good ones and bad ones, people who really believed in the true essence of that religion, and who, same as here, and people who really perverted it, same as here. And, you know, it's all the same.
It's all the human baggage, really, when you think about it.
Exactly.
I mean, any belief, any particular, or belief or non-belief, or any particular structure or system, some of us end up messing it up.
Yeah. And I'm just going to get off my horse now here, but I have to say, too, you know, I found the people, you know, it's like I have a theory that, you know, okay, it's going to get me in trouble, but, you know, atheism is just another religion now. You know, the people who believe in atheism are so, they're as dogmatic as, you know, some of them, or as your worst, you know, religious people.
I agree.
Totally agreed. I would not argue with that to any extent. As an atheist, I totally freaking agree.
There are people that treat it in the same terminology and same ways as somebody who is of a very strict dogmatic religious form would. They do exactly the same things.
Very true.
The question, though, is in terms of Eastern religions, do we tend to, and you're saying that a lot of people tend to view it as a pure religion, but to a large extent, especially in modern culture, and at least for the last 150 years or so, and before that, we tend to be more critical of those religions, that they're somehow less than our religions from a Western viewpoint, less than our religions. The Muslims are obviously viewed as barbaric and all murderous terrorists. And is that reflected in the science fiction that is coming out now or has come out in the last 60 years?
No, I would say that.
What about Hinduism?
I would say that Western fiction is actually apologetic for anything other than Christianity, because the Western writing is birthed from Christianity. You know, I mean, that's our religious heritage, if you want to call it that. Mm. And so it's necessarily hostile in trying to distance itself from the Christianity that was such a part of our just, especially in the United States, who we were as a country. You know, I mean, everybody talked that way, not that everybody believed it necessarily, but that was the language that was used, was religious language and a lot of things. And so we have tried to distance ourselves so far away from that in English literature that we are more supportive of the other religions when writing them into our stories.
I don't know if I would fully agree. Well, I mean, I guess maybe perhaps when we talk about, like what Jason was saying, with religions that are perceived by Westerners to be, you know, like peaceful, wonderful, great, you know, non-bloody religions. I think there is more of an acceptance in science fiction of those, and that we treat those with, I guess, more respect. But if we include something like, say, Islam among what Jen is saying is Eastern, I know we just had that discussion, maybe it doesn't belong there, but I know that there is a very, very treatment of that. There are people who treat it within the literature as in a very negative light. They focus on particular groups and they see it as this, you know, well, a fairly negative, violent, terrible religion. And then there's, I mean, the people that seem, at least from my perspective, that are writing positively about Islamic faith are people who are either of that faith or from that part of the world or have some sort of personal connection with it. But, I mean, a few years ago, I mean, there was that whole ordeal about the, what magazine? It was an online magazine where a guy had written a story about a terrorist. And there was this whole email exchange between the editor and this guy about the rejection letter. And it was very problematic in what he was saying about the Islamic character. And I know that that blew up, and that was a very, very big thing several years ago. I know I blogged about it. Now I can't remember anything.
You mean
about
Helix
it.
Magazine?
Yes, yes, yeah. And I remember that was very, very scary. And I think maybe recently things have changed somewhat, and there is more positive treatment because we're getting more attention paid to trying to treat that particular faith, or at least versions of that faith, and at least accurately. But I don't know. I mean, that's just my perspective, and maybe I'm kind of have my head in certain circles, so I see too much of the bad.
Well, I mean, and the question is even though we may be portraying certain Eastern religions as more pure and we treat them more respectfully or in our eyes as Westerners, are we actually treating them respectfully? Are we actually bothering to learn about them and portray them properly for what they are, as opposed to what we think they are?
Is that
happening in science fiction?
Well, Jen, I think that actually does happen most of the time, because the people who write about those particular religions tend to hold to many of the same tenets or actually are part of those particular faiths. I mean, I think of Ursula Le Guin, especially. Gwyn? I never pronounced her last name right. you just can't. It's impossible. Who is essentially Buddhist in a lot of what she says and how she thinks and all that. And so that makes its way into her fiction and in her writing. And it's really undeniable that it's there. And I would think the same way. If I, as a person of faith, were to write stories, it's going to be there.
Sure.
Like what I believe. So basically what I'm saying is that it's often treated positively because those people are part of that faith, or at least hold to many of the same values and tenets of that faith. And I find that in my own reading, most of the time it's positively treated if the person holds to it. It's negatively treated if the person does not.
Does not, right.
That's interesting. It'd be very interesting to do a poll to see, or to go through the stories that do treat the various religions and see who is who and how they treat it, to see if that actually bears out statistically.
Yeah. Would be hard, right, though, because so many authors refuse to say what they believe.
And they rightfully so, because the second you say something, I mean, that is remotely controversial, there are big problems. I mean, Jason's basically screwed. He said controversial stuff on this episode, and once people hear that, I mean, your career's over, man.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. Great. It hadn't even started yet. Wonderful.
No one listens to this. Thanks, Adam.
No one listens anyway, so it's all good.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that is very... And I think that's probably an intelligent thing for a lot of authors to do, is to keep some of their personal beliefs to themselves, because that's just a good career choice, because the second you come out, I mean... Just look at John C. Wright.
Oh, I was just going to mention Wright. I was waiting for you to finish to mention him. Go on.
I mean, I know he has very controversial opinions about a variety of topics. I mean, the ones I'm most familiar with and the point at which I stopped listening were his comments about homosexuals and pedophilia. And that pretty much gave him a black mark among anybody who does basically just completely disagrees with that, which is a lot of people. And I know John, you still read his blog, and I know he says controversial things every once in a while. So, but I mean, I guess he's pretty brave to basically just say whatever the hell he feels. So
he is, but he's really trying to have a dialogue. Like, he knows that he holds to a particular idea and he believes it fervently and is not afraid to say, this is what I think. I mean, you know, he doesn't pussyfoot around what he believes, and you know, if that pisses people off, well, it's going to piss people off.
True.
But that's the same thing is true of many of the, let's say, atheists out there who, you know, just constantly bash Christianity or Islam or any other faith and just say, you know, it's horrible, it's awful, it's this opiate of the masses, the whole bit kind of thing. Well, how is that any different? I mean, they're just holding to their particular opinion loudly. It's just that it's more generally agreed upon.
Well, see, that's what fascinates me about John C. Wright, is before he became essentially a Christian fundamentalist, I mean, I believe he is Catholic, but he is a very fundamentalist version of Catholic. Before that, he was a fundamentalist atheist, and mm-hmm. he was, you know, basically going at this from the other side, and then he had a religious experience and went the other side. And so it fascinates me that's my earlier comment about atheist is the type of personality that feels so certain of what they believe in that they must inflict that belief upon everyone else with a sledgehammer. I have strong views, but I've been around the world enough that I think, you know what, you know, I don't think I should take a sledgehammer and insert beliefs into other people's brains. And, you know, so I do wonder about the type of personality that is attracted to extreme opinions in our world.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Extremism in any form is not a good thing. Even if, I mean, yes, I'll give a guy props for speaking his mind, but.
Oh, yeah.
But
and it's going to sound like I'm just totally defending Wright, and part of it's because we agree on a lot of things. So I am defending him. I mean, I have to admit to that. But just, he does hold to some really what most people would consider extreme positions. I agree with him on a lot of those because I am what most people would consider a fundamentalist Christian. And I'm not afraid to say it. But people would call me that. Many would. Anyway, point being that, like, he's trying to reason these things out. I mean, it's that whole shift in position is that he went from fundamentalist atheist to fundamentalist Catholic. So he, even for himself, is often trying to reason these things out by arguing with the opposing position.
That's interesting.
That would be the way it would be for me. If I were to have a religious discussion with a person, I'm as much trying to hone my own beliefs as I am trying to persuade somebody else.
And that's a good thing. I actually like that. When you're trying to, you know, reason out and discuss things with the world and trying to come to a greater truth, I think that's a great thing. And I do, John, I don't know how to say this. I don't know if you've read Wright's blog recently. I don't know how you feel about this, but he was praising the John Norman's Gore books and recommending them to people. So I don't know if you've read that post.
No, I have not. It's on my list to read, but I'm guessing it's not a good thing.
No. Actually, he gives it. He says it's not great, but he does kind of reluctantly. He does recommend the first 3 to 6 books to people, and I was like, ooh, surprised more people haven't yelled about that.
I don't know anything about these books.
Yeah. Jason, explain more.
Oh, you don't know. Does anybody else know the Gore books?
I know the Gore books, and I have told Duke about the Gore books and their treatment of women, for one thing. But I think that's as far as I took it with them. So.
It's a series of books that came out in the 70s by author John Norman, who, it was like an alternate Earth type of science fiction with a lot, mm-hmm. and it involved a good deal of erotica. And mm-hmm. but he was very extremely popular, and if you saw the covers, you'd recognize him. Lots of very big breasted women, but not in an intelligent big breasted way, not like an intelligent breast we were talking about earlier.
Not an HBO version, as we've been.
No, not the HBO version. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah,
so.
Sorry. I didn't mean to derail a very good conversation. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, good. Yeah.
But is that the only issue people have with those novels necessarily? I mean, that's a big issue. I grant you that. But is that the only issue?
I think that's the main issue. The Gore novels were not very well written there, but they were okay for their time. But yeah, it was mainly the sexism and the, it wasn't just all the, erotica. It was, women were just disposable.
Oh, I hate books like that.
Yeah.
More than disposable. I mean, extremely, extremely disposable.
Oh. And there are still people that live according to the Gorian lifestyle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It became a whole movement back in the 70s and early 80s.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. I mean,
so there's just a lot of history there, a whole lot of cultural effect and things like that. But, okay. I can see that. Where that could really come back to bite him.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, and they even refer to it. People who really like the books, they talk about the Gorian philosophy.
Wow.
Which that I've never explored it that deep, but I'm like, wow.
Yeah, if you read his blog enough, he's often very satirical too. So I almost wonder if he's doing that in a facetious way.
Oh, I know.
You know what I mean?
And I was teasing. It just, you know, we were mentioning him, I'd surfed over to his blog, and I'm like, oh, Gore, hey. And he does mention all the, and I'll give him props. Wright does mention the negative stuff that's going on in the novels, you know, but he said he first read him when he was a teenager and he didn't realize all the stuff then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you do learn a lot. I mean, I've read novels that I've read in my later years that I'm like, oh, my word, I can't believe I thought this was good. Like Terry Goodkind? Much?
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. It, for what it's worth, Wright says, while he recommends the books, he says, I also recommend that no one read the books until he is over 35 and happily married or taken his vows as a man of the cloth.
Or married a feminist, hopefully.
That would probably work too.
Well,
yeah.
I don't know how feminist his wife is, but she's also a writer, so a published writer successfully.
Yeah, who is his wife?
J.G. Lamplighter, published with Tor Books, wrote the Prospero series of like urban fantasies.
Yeah I know what you're talking about now. Yeah,
that's his wife.
I didn't know that. Cool.
Yeah, so she's a very emancipated woman.
Cool.
Well, as long as he doesn't apply to the Gorian lifestyle, then all is well in my universe. I don't know how he feels about other things, but you know.
I'll send you some links. No, I'm just.
All right.
Okay,
mark him off my list. Anyway.
So we need to bring Adam into the discussion, and I know he has. What was our second discussion topic, which is basically why is fantasy more popular than science fiction? And probably we'll just not talk about this quite as much as we did about religion. But it will give Adam a chance to talk because apparently the post I sent you all, which was why is fantasy ascendant over SF, he had some issues with it. So do you want to take the stage, Adam? You want to talk about that?
Well, it's a very sexist view of why fantasy is more popular than science fiction. And I'm a person who, you know, I really don't care about all these gender fail things. But even I saw it, and it's pretty much just said because urban fantasy has a lot of romance in it, fantasy is winning over science fiction. And I'm like, hey, I love a good romance, and I'm not a woman. I still read science fiction. It's just really shallow as an article.
Incredibly.
I would agree. Yeah, I mean, a lot of his reasons are fairly, I mean, I don't know, I just kind of, like, video games, it's not done well for the fairer gender, which I've always found that kind of offensive to call women the fairer gender. Like,
called us the fairer gender?
Yeah, he called you the fairer gender.
I missed that part? What an ass!
Yeah. I mean, he thinks that video games, like, that chicks don't play video games, which is, you know, total full of crap. They play video games. Some of my friends are women who play more video games than I ever played.
I'm one of them. So.
He also believes that video games are also leading young males away from reading SF, and that's part of the decline. That SF is a boys genre. So
that's actually the one thing that I found even slightly intriguing, that one idea. I was like, oh, it almost makes sense. It doesn't actually hold up to any sort of, you know, coherent thought, but it was the one point that I almost bought into.
Yeah. Can I get on my soapbox here?
Of course.
Yes.
Okay, let me pull it up and jump up and start preaching here, because science fiction is more popular today than it has ever been. And look at all the top Hollywood films. Science fiction. I mean, you know, science fiction dominates. And fantasy is a close second, but the biggest blockbusters all tend to be science fiction. Mm-hmm. And then you have the science fiction genre, which seems to have fewer and fewer readers. And in my opinion, the problem is that the genre is too insular, and you can't, you know, people go out and they enjoy a great science fiction movie, but if they try to pick up a science fiction book, it's almost impossible to read unless you have immersed yourself in the science fiction genre for 20 years. So I think that's the biggest problem. But, you know, that's my opinion why so much of science fiction people it seems to be dwindling and there's a smaller readership.
I will completely agree with that. I mean, I handed one of the people in our superior edition of our writing group The Quantum Thief by Rajan Yemi, and he's read fantasy his whole life, and he had no idea what was going on. I mean, you really do need to have a good basis in science fiction. It's weird. You have to. It's like a catch-22. You need to know science fiction to read science fiction.
Right.
Yeah.
There isn't a lot of entry level. It's definitely becoming that way. There's no gateway, like Isaac Asimov, like spaceships just going off in places and adventures happening, or Paul Anderson's Nicholas Van Ryn stories. Those kind of things are hard to find, and those are easy to get into as a science fiction, but you can't find that in the modern science fiction. It's all this cyberpunk, or it has to be like this really philosophically deep something or other and make some sort of statement, and it's hard. I mean, there is tons of science fiction, and I had trouble with Rajan Yemi's book.
Yeah, but there is, for what it's worth, there are some novels that are starting to come out that are more open to other people, like The Wind-Up Girl. Found a great readership outside the genre. And I think partly because you could just pick it up. It was, you know, science fiction through and through, and it was disturbing in many ways, but you could pick it up as a non-science fiction reader and read it and enjoy it and recommend it to others.
I have to disagree with you, Jason.
Yeah,
me too.
I totally
that
have
only
to
works.
With you.
Yeah, it only works for the literary types, man. I think the literary types picked it up because it's this sort of literary novel and it won the literary science fiction award or whatever you want to call.
Yeah.
But I don't think that in your average reader, because I've handed it off to a few people and they've been like, I hate this book. I can't stand it.
I'd be one of them.
I loved it. I just finished it not too long ago. But I've also been reading science fiction for 30 years. It's a difficult book. On a lot of levels, not just in terms of the conceptual stuff that's going on in the series. It's not, I have to say, it's not an easy book to read. It flows nicely and whatnot, but you would have to have, you'd have to find the right type of person, random person, to enjoy it. And it's probably going to be somebody who is really against GMOs. that's the only type of person that I could think of that might pick it up and not be a science fiction fan and then read it and be like, oh, I'm convinced this is why science fiction is great.
Well, I guess my greater point, maybe that was the wrong book to bring out, but you're seeing a lot of novels that are successful, science fiction novels that are reaching a larger audience, like the dystopian post-apocalyptic novels, The Road by Cormac McCarthy.
Right.
Paolo Bacigalupi's Shipbreaker, which is a young adult novel. The Hunger Games, again, you know, novels like that, science fiction novels that are reaching a larger audience. And the only ones that don't seem to be reaching the larger audience are those that are focused more on traditional science fiction, you know, that you really do have to know the genre history to enjoy them.
I think you hit the nail right on the head, Jason. It's like this dystopia, everybody can get to because its jumping off point is the society we're in right now,
right,
or something near to it. So we all identify with that. But as soon as you make some huge leap thousands of years into the future with spaceships and et cetera, people are not into that right now. They're just not picking that kind of stuff up or feeling like they can, in my opinion.
Right. I think the problem is that there really isn't a lot of science fiction, at least that I've noticed, coming out of the young adults genre or area.
Right. There's nobody hitting them.
You have all these older authors. I mean, you still have Ray Bradbury there. He's still awesome and he's still great for kids. But
for kids? I'm not talking to you.
I read it when I was
you're done.
What?
Hey, what? It is in I teach in the Florida schools and it is Ray Bradbury's science fiction exists in the textbooks, literature textbooks.
I started reading Ray Bradbury when I was about 6, 7, 8 years old.
Now, it's specific things. It's not like everything. I mean, you can't.
No.
It's particular pieces. And like Fahrenheit 451 is usually reserved for high school. But yeah.
Right. No. It's very much appropriate as an introduction to science fiction because they're easy reads. They have a lot of you know, conceptual stuff going on and a lot of philosophy, but when it comes right down to it, very simple and easy to get into. So, like I said, I started reading Ray Bradbury when I was at most 7 or 8, and I read him. I actually stopped reading him heavily when I was 12 or 13 because I had finished everything. So, but I mean, there is some stuff, but like I said, it's all older stuff. You know, you're talking like C.S. Lewis and Out of the Silent Planet and whatnot. And then there's the series of books about the another dystopic series about the three-legged alien ship things. God, I totally forget the name of it right now. Anyway, what I'm saying is there is stuff, but it's older books which aren't being marketed anymore to younger readers. And really, science fiction does have the problem that unless you start young, you're probably not going to pick it up when you're older.
And I would also argue that a lot of the what is considered the classics of science fiction, even the stuff that we would consider to be like the height of the golden age, all that adventure and stuff, a lot of that is not going to appeal to newer readers. It's not dealing with themes that maybe are relevant to them, or the prose is not what they're used to, or it's bad. Not the kind of adventure they're looking for, or
bad exactly.
Just straight. Or bad. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, you could hand a bunch of kids now, you know, whatever, Asimov or heaven forbid Heinlein, maybe not kids, but teenagers. But they're not that I just don't see that as being appealing. And I think you're right, Jen, that young adult literature, which should be our gateway, has so little science fiction in it. I mean, it's been getting better. We've been seeing a little bit more, mostly in the dystopian realm. But it doesn't seem like there's a lot of that light. You know, where are space adventures and our stories to sort of get people, those spaceship minds lovingness, like whatever. I just totally like ran out of steam. Excuse me.
I don't think your argument entirely holds water because, I mean, I was introduced to science fiction through Asimov's Norby novels.
How old are you?
I am 31.
Okay, you were... Not a teenager. You were a teenager during what, the
90s?
Yeah, that's a little different.
Why? How?
Because a lot of the classics were still pretty fresh in the 90s.
I wouldn't say those were that fresh.
No, that's not that fresh.
I was digging those things out of the back dustbins of the library. I mean, no question. Nobody was picking them up. I'd been the first person to check them out in like 3 years at the time I was reading them.
So would you say it's just a marketing thing?
I think it very much is a marketing thing because I've actually read books that, what was the one? Red Planet? Is it a Kim Stanley Robinson? I can't remember.
Yes.
I think that's the one I'm talking about. Slightly newer, and it has a teenager as
the. Oh, we're gonna find out. Well, we may find out because you know they're turning Asimov's Foundation trilogy into a film trilogy.
Exactly. Uh-oh. And that's going to be a way to get people into it because it's going to be dealing with characters that are seemingly younger, at least. And that might actually bring in a younger audience to those books. But I think there is a marketing issue here as well, is that, you know, even in science fiction that might have those younger characters that would appeal to the teenage audience, they're not getting marketed to the kids. They're still getting marketed to the adults. So who knows? I mean, that might be a mistake on their part. If they want to start attracting new readers,
they might have to start marketing stuff maybe to the kids.
Exactly.
Or to young adults, at least.
That's like Madeline L. Ingalls' story where when she wrote A Wrinkle in Time, she intended it to be for adults. And they tried and tried and tried to get the adults interested in it, and they weren't. And then some genius publicist or editors said, you know, why don't we just repackage this as for young adults? And bam, Newbery Medal and the whole works. So
exactly. And that's a great example of a series of books that science fiction for kids, you know, it's that was a lot of at least girls my age. That's what they were reading. And I don't know how many of them continued reading science fiction. But at least it was an introduction to it that could have taken them further. But I don't see a lot of authors like that, except, of course, for what's her name with the Hunger Games. And then you have the other I Am Number Four, which granted probably sucks, but
well, Jason,
who knows
a little bit about that. So that was not a very good movie, I'm sure.
I Am Number Four.
Jason. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. You want me to comment on it? I mean, actually, yeah, I mean, the movie wasn't that good. The novel was okay. And in fact, the novel, I reviewed it and, you know, it was an okay novel. And it, as a gateway science fiction novel, it'd be very good. And in fact, my oldest son read it and he just loved the novel. And it was the first time he ever left a movie theater, said, "Dad, you know what? The book was much better than the novel."
Oh, you know, so, good.
But we need more novels like that, and you know, so. But until that happens, I'm not. You know, I don't know what's going to change it, but.
Yeah, no.
See, there you go, Jason. You just need to write a young adult novel.
No pressure.
Yeah. Hey, with your whole sci-fi strange thing, you could have a lot of fun with a young adult novel.
Oh yes.
I think. China Mayville actually has the potential to be marketed successfully to a younger audience. And the same thing goes for Tobias. The same thing goes for Tobias Bekel.
Bekel, definitely I could see him to marketed to young adults. I don't know about Mayville.
Give you a know, kid the city and the city and watch them cross their eyes.
Well, granted. They're difficult, but they're still, in terms of the prose, that it's actually kind of easy to read him, oddly enough. So he was, for me, he was an easy one to get into. And I could see the stories, I could see the characters appealing to the younger audience. So.
Yeah, but you're smart.
Yeah, that's kind of like bragging, saying Mayville's easy for you.
Yeah.
I'm not that smart, though.
Because I've tried to read Perdido Street Station multiple times, and it still confounds me. I mean, I love it, but it's... tough.
It's a tough book. It's a hard book. But I mean, maybe give teenagers some extra credit so we don't insult any potential teenagers we have listening to this. That maybe they could.
Teenagers are just as intelligent as adults. We've just had more of an educational experience. So it's not like they're not capable of reading these books and getting them. You'll get more if you've, you know, read more and studied more, possibly. But like I'm saying, I think it's more that the characters and what's going the worlds that he's creating could very much appeal to a younger audience.
So what you're
saying... I'm not saying 12 and 13-year-olds, but 16, 17, 18-year-olds for sure.
So what you're saying is that teenagers would really love Isaac from Perdido Street Station.
He's awesome.
With all of
it's also not science fiction.
Well, okay, but...
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you have to go with that, too.
But
let's ignore the details and just, you know.
But with the bed bugs and the weird body juices and...
I mean, honestly, the gateway novel I give to most people for science fiction is Ender's Game, because, I mean, it's incredibly easy to read, and the only really weird abstract parts are the video game / dream sequences.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Oh, that's a great young adult science fiction novel.
Wait, which one?
Ender's Game.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, right.
And it is marketed to young adults now, so.
Well, it's regularly taught in high schools, actually.
Yeah. Really? They started teaching that as soon as I graduated, so.
Yeah, it's now, in many schools, it's actually part of the curriculum.
Cool.
It is?
Yeah.
No? I went to the wrong high school.
Well, this is in the last maybe 15, 20 years at most.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I just graduated high school.
I'm 2 years older than you are. John,
what's that?
So, but
I'm not assuming your age, but you mentioned something about 20, 30 years ago starting reading last year. You know,
oh, yeah. All right. Almost 30
years. So you dated yourself.
25 years of reading.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, we have been going for over 2 hours. So
what do you have?
Well, it's not my fault you didn't say anything, Adam. Shut up. So Jason, unfortunately, is having to disappear. So we should probably close out the show. Especially at 2 hours, like anybody is going to listen beyond like the first 5 minutes.
Nobody listens anyway.
Shut up. All right. So any final comments? Anyone want to let us know what it is they're up to before we close out?
Well, perhaps you should start. I thought, wasn't there something on Megan Fox and Crisco?
No, stop with that.
Oh, it has been tweeted.
Oh, you're going to ruin my career.
Yeah, yes, it was tweeted. Sorry.
I hate you.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you so much for that. It'll last me for a while. But no, seriously, do you have anything you're working on, Jason, that is going to be published soon? Or?
I've got another story. I've got a story in the current issue of InnerZone. And I have another story, which is a sequel to my story, Plague Birds, which will be coming out in InnerZone in the near future. So, so I'm excited about that. Although the current story, I'm getting kind of reviews, like a number three review from people. So I don't know if people are liking the current story, but that's okay. Just keep going.
You hit and you miss.
As long as you like it.
Yeah. So otherwise, I'm working on a novel, and I've got some other short stories, quite a few underway.
And your short story collection just came out, too, in ebook format.
Yes. Yes, it is. And trying to get it out in print edition, too, maybe at some point.
Oh, fantastic.
Ooh, I want that. I want that.
Right. I want exactly.
It. Cool. I covet.
We're here.
And everybody cool. can find Jason on his website, which is obviously his name, jasonsanford.com.
Yep. Which is yep.
Awesome. And John, you got anything you want to work on or plug your website?
Yeah, sure. Actually, something tangential to genteel, whatever.
Tangential.
I promise. Tangential.
As long as you don't say tangential, then we're all good.
Yeah, I almost did. Thank you. to our discussion, at any rate, related to our discussion tonight, is that I actually have an article coming out in a major magazine called World, which is a Christian magazine, where I recommend 6 science fiction books that Christians can read. And I actually include some that are very approachable. We were talking about the difficulty of science fiction that's approachable. I recommend Jack McDevitt, and middle schoolers can read it, and it's clean and all this other stuff. Not all of his books, but some of them. And anyway, Echoes particularly, which was on the Nebula list this year.
Oh, by Tim Levin? Yeah.
No, oh. Echo by his was Echo City.
Oh, got it.
Tim Levin. Echo by Jack McDevitt.
Oh, got it. Yeah, sorry.
Is on that. At any rate, so I have that article coming out in World, and they're currently having a promotion where you can sign up for 6 free issues, and one of those issues will be where my article is.
Oh, fantastic.
Sweet.
So if people are interested in taking a look at that, they're welcome to do that. And then, of course, I run the blog graspingforthewind.com, which has lots of interviews and things that people who work with me put together and we post up there. So it's a great site. We have lots of useful links every day for people to check out. So we'd love to have you guys come by and visit.
Yeah, it's a great blog. I follow it. So it's good. It's good stuff. Cool. All right. So Adam, anything you want to tell people where to find you or...
No, I haven't had anything interesting to say in a long time, so.
Yeah, you're pretty useless this episode, so. Oh, okay. Well, his blog is adamcalloway.blogspot.com.
Yeah, I just got sick of science fiction shorts lately, so I'm taking a break from all the reviewing.
Oh, okay. Well, but you are writing, you know, controversial
stuff. Of course, I have.
Yeah.
Writing it, not getting it published.
Cool. All right, and Jen, I don't think you ever do anything useful, do you?
I don't do anything useful ever. Yeah.
Okay.
I suck.
All right. Well, I'll be super quick. Only thing I started was podcasting a novel, which should be fun and terrifying. And apparently I have a good reading voice. I don't know where that came from, but
it's sexy.
Yeah, sure. It's on my blog.
Awkward.
Shut up. Anyway, on my blog, I'll put a link to it. Anybody wants to listen to the first chapter's up, the next one will go up. Well, there'll be like 4 chapters by the time it goes up. But anyway, on my blog, I'll put a link. And so that's basically it. If anybody has any questions or wants to yell at Jason, or particularly if you want to yell at Adam, we really appreciate it.
What did I do this episode?
Nothing. That's exactly why
you existed, Adam.
Oh, man.
Told you we were going to pick on you. So if you want to send us a message or anything, you can do that 3 ways. You can send us an email.
Skiffyandfanty@gmail.com.
Do a Twitter.
twitter.com/skiffyandfanty.
Or leave a comment on our blog.
skiffyandfanty.wordpress.com.
Cool. All right, guys, that's our show. Thanks, everybody, for being on for our very special, enormously long episode. Thanks, Jason.
Oh, no. Glad to be here.
Cool. Thank you, John.
Thanks for the invite.
No problem. And, of course, well, we don't want to thank Adam, but
I don't want your thanks.
Cool. Everybody, you guys have a great night, and hopefully we'll do something like this again. Maybe not 2 hours long, but certainly we'll do something. So.
Cool beans.
Sounds good. Take care.
Cool. You guys have a great one. Our new intro music is Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.